Coming up on today's episode, we break down Statement Time by the Jets after their emphatic win in Colorado. Plus, Rucker McGroarty heads back to school for his junior year.
Hello, everybody. Recording live from somewhere.
What's good and welcome to another episode of Skates and Plates on the Hockey Podcast Network. I'm your host, Brandon Rewicki. You can follow me on Twitter at Brandon_Rewicki or the podcast at Skates Plates Pod. All right, hope you guys had yourselves a great weekend, and why wouldn't you? After a touchdown in Colorado, as the Winnipeg Jets inch ever so closely to home ice advantage in round one. The division title is out of their grasp, but home ice is just a point or two away. So we'll obviously break down that beauty in Denver for the Jets and a few other things before we get ready for the end of the regular season and the start of the NHL's postseason, which is just days away. It's the best time of year, and I can't wait to get into it. Doing so with me once again is CJOB's Tyson Rewicki from his casa, which remains undefeated. This is starting to turn into something legendary, Tyson. I mean, I know you cashed in on a big UFC 300 parlay. The Jets are an absolute wagon since you moved into the new place. Life is good for T-Dog right now.
It's very good. Not gonna lie, Sunday was a little bit of a sore one, but you know, like the soreness goes away a little bit easier after a couple big wins in a couple different categories. But we're feeling good. A couple games left, and then it's all we're gonna put all the marbles in and see if they can replicate that game against the Colorado four straight times. Get them out of there. 28 goals in four games.
I'll tell you this. If we see that game, it will be four more times. The Winnipeg Jets will need to get past the Avalanche. Well, let's get right into it here then, Tyson. I mean, shocking. Not that the Jets picked up a win, but by the absolute demolition derby that we saw where, you know, the Jets took the pedal off the gas after 40 minutes and that was all she wrote for the club. But I have a simple question for you. Because there's no real notes we can take from the game, considering it was an absolutely flawless performance by every single player on the roster. But I just have a simple question for you. I've got an answer. I'm intrigued by yours. And we'll do this by percentage basis. What was your probability of the Winnipeg Jets beating the Colorado Avalanche in a first-round matchup before Saturday's game? And then what do you have it now after what we witnessed Saturday afternoon?
I had it at beforehand 50-50.
Okay.
After 60-40 Jets.
Ooh, interesting.
I can't let it sway it that much.
This is the difficult thing because realistically you're correct. Like, one game shouldn't be a massive swing in either direction, right? But that also wasn't most games.
Exactly. But what I'm thinking, my thinking is that, so we know the Jets can do that to the Avalanche, and that's an advantage for them. The thing that worries me is game one. And the Avs go, hey, you know what? The Jets put up 7 in our barn. Let's go into Winnipeg and put up 7 in their barn and absolutely curb stomp them and show them what they did to us a couple weeks ago or a week ago. That's what scares me.
That it's like a bit of a wake-up call almost.
Yeah. So because okay. I remember even when we talked about it last week, it was, you know, I think you can get like a 2-0, 3-0 victory. And that's perfect. 7, while it's awesome in the moment, and you're like, holy smokes, we just beat the Avs right before we're gonna face them. 7-0's a little like, ooh, that we really gave it to them.
Tyson, that is the most defeatist, fatalist approach I've ever seen from a fan base. That we won that game by too much. It was too dominant. And now they're going to turn it around on us. I don't blame you, because that's what the Flyers have done to us as a family for so long. But that's just so sad. For me, I would have this. I'm kind of 50-50. I don't think I would have went 50-50. I think I would have had the Jets slight underdogs. I probably would have said 45-55 going into that series against the Avalanche before the game. After what we saw Saturday afternoon, I don't know how you can't have it 100-0. No, I wouldn't go quite. I wouldn't go quite that far. I don't know. I think it is a significant change. I really do. I don't like. I think if that was a 3-2 game and it's back and forth, tight contest, I don't think it really tells us all that much. But that wasn't just, you know, Georgiev was leaky and the Jets find a way, you know, to skate away. The shot clock is close and the Jets, you know, maybe an undeserved romp of a victory. That was an ass kicking. And that might not even be that might not be giving it total justice. Like, from start to finish, and I'll say start, the start of the game to the end of the second period, it was an abomination of a performance by the Avalanche and just the ultimate muscle flex by Winnipeg. I to me, 60-40 feels like I'm doing the Jets a disservice after that game. I really think Winnipeg should be resounding favorites now against the Avalanche in that first round matchup. And I know the firepower that's taken over there with Colorado, you know, maybe the presumptive MVP, either the best or the second best defenseman in hockey. I get all that. But it's going to be hard for me to wipe away that performance. I mean, that was just a team operating, and they've been ramping to this, Tyson, right? But a team operating at the peak of their powers and rounding into form at the exact perfect time, combined with the Avalanche not playing strong hockey for a decent amount here. Like, I think it's a culmination of the Jets meeting the Avs at the best possible time. Winnipeg's playing great. Colorado is, they're teetering in a big, big way right now. And I mean, if they could neutralize McKinnon and McCarr to the degree that they did in that game Saturday, extrapolate that over to 4, 5, 6, 7 games against Colorado, the depth of Winnipeg is going to eat Colorado alive. They're just going to kill them. I don't think we'll see that dominant of a performance over the course of the series against Colorado, but boy, oh boy, does it never give me a ton of hope that they could at least hold serve against McKinnon and company. But I think what you see further down the roster gives the club a ton of hope in, I don't even think we can say pulling off the upset now and just pulling off a first round victory.
Well, and if you're looking at that game and going, you know, if you take the Jets strength and the Avalanche strength, disregarding goaltending, obviously, because clearly the Jets have the advantage. But like, when we're talking like 5-on-5 play / like special teams, the Jets forward group dominated the Avs defense. And that's, you know, what's, I feel a lot better of the Avs depth forward group going up against the Jets depth D group. And I think like that just shows that this team really does have that ability where they can go into, and even guys like McCarr, like he was frustrated. He was very frustrated. Sean Walker had a pretty brutal game and he's been very solid for them as well. Like it was, the Avalanche just struggled to deal with the Jets forecheck in that one. And it was just relentless. It was the way that they were battling guys in front of the net too. It's just, it seems so uncharacteristic out of Colorado, but this might just be, you know, you could look at it nihilistically, like you said earlier, and you could also look at it and just think, you know what, like maybe the Avs were just defeated. Like maybe it was
or Tyson, dare we say, are the Avalanche frauds?
Yeah, you know, like,
no. Hey, doesn't feel so good now, yeah, does it?
Talk all this smoke earlier in the year, and now all of a sudden it's, oh, well. Well, we only have 2 MVP candidates on our team. How and you know what? I don't want to single out Colorado fans, but Colorado fans have the worst broadcaster, TV broadcasters out of any team. And I'm willing, they can come on the pod if they got a problem with it, and I'll bring up some evidence. I'll bring up some clips.
I think they're well aware of the lengths they'll go on in terms of bias towards their home team.
I mean, the Jets, they laid a smackdown on the Avalanche on the ice. You know, maybe we have a little bit of media versus media scrap coming up.
I feel we got Kevin Sawyer on our side. I've seen his PIM totals on HockeyDB. I love our chances against 98%. Dan Robertson can hold his own. I could see a flying elbow from Big Robertson coming down. I love our chance. We should do a power ranking in terms of like toe to toe matchups between broadcast booths. Easy top five.
But for real though, like I Saturday is just an absolute confidence booster. And now you come in the playoffs with the ability knowing, hey, we can absolutely curb stomp these guys whenever we want. We just got to show up. And that's all it is. Like now at this point, there is no excuse for you to not show up in these games. If you don't, if things go wrong for the Jets this playoff series, it's because they didn't show up. They can beat this team easy. Like they really can beat them fairly easily, in my opinion. You just got to do it now. There's no doubt now. You can do this. Just go out there and do it.
Well, and it's interesting too, Tyson, because the 7-0 win, to me, it doesn't mean that Colorado is destined to lose in the first round against Winnipeg. Like they've had a group. I mean, like they've won a Stanley Cup before. There's a ton of high end talent. Georgiev can get hot, right? So it's not an absolute guarantee that we see the Jets take down Colorado in five per se. I would say that if the outcome was flipped and Colorado beat Winnipeg 7-0. That I think it would have been a guarantee that Colorado would have won that series. Like there was an element to me. I don't know if you agree with that, but like I think it was more important for the Jets to have a big performance than it was for Colorado. And I like where you were kind of going with that. Now Bones can go, boys. All we got to do is not all we got to do is show up, but all we got to do like there's the blueprint. Like we don't have to do anything else. That right there is the way to go about it. That's a pretty powerful tool for a Winnipeg team that's been, you know, a little bit light on the postseason success these past couple years. So I think it was way, way more important for the Jets to have a result like that than it was for the Avalanche. Speaking of how the team looked in that game, I mean, it's really, really important just because of the way the coaching staff has lined this team up. For them to have a big performance like this. But did you like the way the top line looked? Connor Scheifele, Vilardi? You know, it's tough to say what the exact matchup was, if it was a hard matchup all game long. But I think it's pretty damn promising that, hey, they've been saying all along when the chips are down, we believe that these are the guys to help us get it done. And then they come out with a performance like that, combined with what the second line did. That might have been the more promising outcome there was that the second line, Colorado currently doesn't have an answer for that. I don't know if they will and if they'll rejig their lineup, but what did you make of how, at least up front, the team looked in that one?
Well, I mean, they all looked really good. Like, it's hard, nice. It's hard to say that they looked, that one line looked worse than the other per se, but I don't want to pin my playoff hopes on one good game against one of our rivals. You know what I mean? Like, There are more ample sizes or sample sizes. I meant to say ample sample size, but
ample sample.
But I don't want to get it's tough because you almost don't want to go too far in either direction, right? Like you do still I like do. You want to hope that the Kyle Connor Scheifele pairing does work, but it hasn't. So you know, like you keep on jamming a square peg into a round hole, and then once it eventually fits in because you've just destroyed the whatever it is to get it in there, you're like, well, see, it fits now, so let's roll with it. Like it worries me, and I don't want to wait till game three or game four and you're down 2-1 or 3-0, and then it's like, oh, okay, well now let's make a switch. Like, oh great, too late. You guys just blew the series again.
I mean, that's the unknown, is just how adaptable the team is going to be if they get out to an early deficit against the Avalanche. My point was more so just that at least it worked against Colorado. Like, we just haven't seen it work in so long that it was like, okay, obviously it's just a game. In my opinion, it was only two periods. But the roster as a whole, just it proved that it worked. And so at least we know that they're going to go to this well. At least we have a little bit of shred of evidence that, okay, hopefully we can get this thing turned around and it's going to be looking great up against the Avalanche for the next little bit. But yeah, that's the great unknown here. And the biggest question mark, in my opinion, is just going to be how stubborn are the Jets if things aren't working. It's easy to keep it together when it's working, but if it's a 4-1 loss in game one or game two, are we going to be able to alter and change the composition of this team as an answer to what Colorado throws at you? Because that's the other thing is, they're going to be a pissed off, motivated group headed into the first couple games, hopefully in Winnipeg.
And I know that I don't want to go too in on it because we have been talking about it for quite a bit, but you're telling me that if Scheifele, Ehlers, and Vilardi were still together, game one comes and they struggle, like you're telling me that they're not switching the lines right away?
I don't know. I wouldn't say it's guaranteed that they switched them if they lost game one.
No, I'm saying that if Scheifele or if Ehlers was still on the top line and he's on the top line come game one, they struggle. You're telling me that Bones isn't putting Connor right back up onto that top line? I don't think it's the same if they have a bad game one. I don't think Connor's getting off that top line. So that's what annoys me. But we don't have to get too much into it.
Yeah, no, I agree with that. But hey, at the very least, that top line and the rest of the club, they were flying. It just shows the very, like, it's nice sometimes to get a reminder, like when people say cup contenders. That was a cup contending team. That wasn't that'll be a good playoff team. Like, you get that performance over a couple of weeks, it's not out of the realm of possibility that Winnipeg's lifting some hardware. So, like, that to me is just why it was reassuring for the team, nice boost for the fan base, and then most importantly, one step closer to home ice in round one at the very least. And look, I mean, there's a very real chance Dallas gets Vegas in round one. We could be talking about the Winnipeg Jets having home ice throughout the entire Western playoffs, right? So, like, that's why the win was important in a micro sense. But in a bigger scope, the chance that they have now to wrap up home ice, hopefully in their next contest against the Kraken on Tuesday night. You don't want to leave it down to a final game Thursday against Vancouver, but big, big, big result all around. And yeah, I can get down with the Sunday afternoon Jets wideout all across the city. And hey, maybe these afternoon weekend games are the elixir for the Jets against the Avalanche. So we'll see what the schedule looks like. But sign me up for that game one Sunday afternoon here in Winnipeg. Do you want to touch on one more thing from that Avalanche game? And it is escaping me. No, not the Avalanche game. How the Jets handle these final two games. So Connor Hellebuyck will get the start against Seattle. I understand that, right? Like, you got to wrap up home ice. Do you think Brassois should get the start Thursday, regardless of the result against Seattle?
Yeah.
I think so, too.
It's just like, why? for a guy who, I mean, he played great against Nashville, but the numbers second half of the year compared to the first half, it's not, they're different.
And I mean, the hope is you beat Seattle and your B team goes in against Vancouver Thursday. Like, I mean, obviously that's the way to go. But to me, the biggest, as much as I want home ice, I think it's more important to give Hellebuyck that rest, especially because I think Mike McIntyre said, by the sounds of it, the Jets are likely to start the playoffs on the weekend. So it's not, they're like, it's a really quick turnaround, and to give Helly, what, 4 or 5 days off between starts? That to me is more important than grabbing home ice. But the thing, like, and starting Hellebuyck against Vancouver doesn't guarantee you home ice, right? And Brassois has been so great that To me, it should be written in pen. Like, if you could, Bonus should hand in the lineup card and be like, we can't change it. Here's what it is for the week. And whatever happens, happens.
Well, and to have a goalie playing as good as Brossoit has this year, and he's not even going to qualify for the Jennings. Like, to me, if it, this is something that we're going to look back on and be like, why on earth did LB not play more games? Even if it was five more. You know, like, it's just, it really, there was some times during the season where you're like, you know, like, maybe we could toss Brossoit in here and we'll be okay. Like, it was kind of shocking. And I feel bad for Brossoit that if they are able to secure that Jennings trophy, that he's not going to be a part of it, because he's been outstanding in the games that he's played. And he's been a huge part of why their goals against total has been so low. I mean, along with Connor Hellebuck, obviously, but he's your key piece. You need him going at all cylinders. And, you know, like, it's, do you need him playing in unnecessary games? No, you don't. And for a guy who, you know, now with how good LB's playing, if Hellebuck gets hurt, you're screwed.
I
think you are. I we saw last year in the playoffs that LB might not be able to withstand a playoff series.
Oh, like, okay, I kind of get what you're saying.
Definitely, if Hellebuck gets hurt, you're screwed.
Yeah, but I mean, that, I don't know. I think that's the case with 95% of the teams anyway.
Oh, like, no, for sure, but I'm just, do you want to run that risk of having him in a nothing game and guy from Seattle who has nothing to lose just drives the net too hard? And
you're saying Seattle, like, Brossoit's, in your mind, Brossoit should start both games this week.
Yeah.
No. I don't think I like Hellebuck having that much time off, where it could be,
I mean, in hindsight, I would have,
and he's rusty. Yeah. I mean, like, I agree with your overall point that the Jets should have given Brossoit more games during the season. So Hellebuck's at 55 games instead of 59. But can't undo that now. So to me, Helly gets Seattle, Brossoit gets the final game against Vancouver. And then you kind of just decide. I mean, I wonder how many regulars, if that game against Vancouver means nothing, I wonder how many regulars get into the game. To me, anybody that's got any kind of a bump, see ya. Like, you're not hitting the ice. I have no problem if it's the Manitoba Moose against the Vancouver Canucks on Thursday night. Let's put it that way.
But like, you only have the four call-ups, correct? Because you could do the emergency call-ups if then say, hey, we had a huge bug.
We have 15 emergency call-ups. Yeah, no, I get you're limited, but anyone that's dealing with something more than just a minor bump, they get set out, bring up as many guys as you can, and get them rested for that first round playoff matchup. So hopefully that Thursday game means nothing in the grand scheme of things other than the final tune-up before the postseason. But you got to start with a win against Seattle first. So we'll see how the club does when we get back at it later this week. Now, quickly, Tice, let's wrap up the episode here. One more note to make, kind of a big one for the club. Kind of a negative one too, unfortunately. But just before we got on, Rucker McGroarty is heading back to school for his junior season. So one more year for the captain of the gold medal winning junior American team. I mean, it's not positive in my opinion. And maybe we're the wrong people to break this down, because we were, as Flyers fans, still have the Cutter Gauthier saga burning bright in our minds.
I hate this.
But sure would have liked to see Rucker turn pro. Doesn't mean it's worst case scenario, but anytime you get into this situation with these college kids, I kind of like bristle a little bit. Like, oh, two years in and they haven't signed yet. Just hoping for the best, but got to say I'm a little concerned at this point.
I hate this rule. It's so stupid. Like, honestly, especially now with the NIL money coming in, they're making money off. Like, no, you don't get to pick where you go. They need to change the NCAA rules. Like, honestly, Because now you're just going to start to see more and more. I'm not going to say that Rucker is going to leave, but you're going to start to see more and more kids just say, why would I? I can make just as much at college and then go pick where I want to play after.
That's an interesting point that the NHL hasn't really had to deal with yet. I don't know how much they're getting. Like, I know the football, basketball guys are raking in the dough. I don't know to what level hockey is. Nowhere near that level for sure.
Right, but if it's similar
to the AHL money, you can kind of understand why more guys might start going down that route.
Well, yeah, totally. It's like college is fun, and these guys have everything in the palm of their hands, and they're making money on top of it now. And then you get to pick where you want it. Like, hypothetically, you could be done after. You could go make two. Let's just say even under. Let's say $1.6 million in your 4 years in college, and then go and say, hey, this looks like Pittsburgh has an opening on Crosby's wing. I'm gonna play there. And score 30 goals playing on Crosby's wing, and that's the mentality that you're going to start to breed with this situation.
I don't know if you'll. It's definitely a possibility. I got to see a few of those happen because that's what people said when Kevin Hayes did it. That's what people said when Jimmy Vesey did it. Adam Fox, and there really hasn't been a splash of players really. You know, putting their future first and foremost above the team that drafted them. So I need to wait and see on that.
But the money. Sorry.
No, I was just going to say, there is a level of concern for me about specifically McGroarty and the Jets. I mean, look, to be fair, Dylan Sandberg did do a similar thing, went back for his junior year to try to chase a championship. The Jets were able to get him locked in before he headed back for that fourth and final year, the scary one. So I guess there's nothing to really worry about if you're a Winnipeg fan until next college season ends. And you're pretty much left with two options at that point. Either he signs with the Winnipeg Jets or you immediately move on from him if he chooses not to sign, right? Like, I feel like there's only two options and we find out what happens at the end of next season. So you're kind of concerned, but in the grand scheme of things, like you can't worry about it until next year happens anyways.
You can't. And that's what sucks about it. I wish that if you're Chevy that you can get like a nudge, like, hey, if you really don't want to be here, just let me know. And then I can kind of play coy with some GMs and say, hey, we want to make our team better right now. How about this guy?
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like if you can find that out, at least I would respect that. His decision more if you're pulling the Cutter Gauthier where it's just like, I don't want to be here. It's cold.
Yeah.
That's it. Like then you're a lame-o.
I mean, the main thing, as is usual with most of life, is just don't be a dink.
Yeah.
And exactly. You'll find out that things, people will probably understand your decision-making one way or the other. I don't want to see Winnipeg get burned by this. Thankfully they haven't so far. But as we all know, the Jets get the raw end of things when it comes to player choice in the NHL, right?
Well, and
thankfully they found a way to lock in a number of high profile college players that they've drafted. Yeah, I would just feel a lot better about this if Rutger was like, "Nah, man, playoff time. I want minutes right now. Let's go."
Well, that's the part that kind of pisses me off of this with all this situation now, and it's kind of getting mad over something that hasn't even happened yet.
Yeah,
but you know, like a guy could make his decision about Winnipeg and literally never step foot in Winnipeg. He was at the development camps. I think it was 2 years ago. You're only allowed to attend one if you're an NCAA athlete. Like, is that like, you know, like you're basing your decision? You've never even been in this city. You just heard that it sucks. You know, and that's where it would really annoy me, where a guy's like, I don't want to play in Winnipeg. I've heard bad things about it. Like, okay, I bet you could hear bad things about a lot of places too.
Yeah.
Like, it's just that, like, so hopefully that doesn't happen. I don't think it's going to happen, but it is, there is the possibility is absolutely there now.
Yeah, now we got to play the waiting game, which always sucks. Sign me up for burning a year of that ELC and getting them in the door this year. But, I mean, look, if the kid wants to go back to college, there's not really a whole lot you could do, even with the enticement of being a professional athlete. So let's hope for the best, and it's a topic we'll get into next year. So we'll worry about it then. In the meantime, though, we got bigger fish to fry because we got to break down some Winnipeg Jets playoff action. And we will be on the doorstep of doing that when we get into our next episode later this week. But that'll do it for us here in this episode. No, it won't, because Tyson's got a big paw up in the air.
Well, I think if playoffs are starting on the weekend, what do we think about a little recap of our bold predictions?
Oh, it's happening. Oh, I didn't save them in my notes for nothing, Tyson. We are, yeah, we'll do an in-depth breakdown of what went wrong and the very few that went right. The next episode will be a bit of a beauty. So now make sure we're going to have to, I mean, the plan is for it to come out Friday morning. We may have to adjust that a little bit depending on when the Jets play and things like that. So just keep an eye out. It'll be out either Friday morning or Saturday morning at the latest. But we'll let you guys know. Keep an eye out on wherever you listen to your podcast and things like that. And thank you for subscribing if you already do. But the plan right now should be out Friday morning. If not, it'll be out before the Jets opening game of the postseason. So just keep an eye out on that. In the meantime, though, thank you guys for tuning in once again to another episode of Skates and Plates on the Hockey Podcast Network. I'm your host, Brandon Rewicki, with CJOB's Tyson Rewicki once again. Like I said, we'll be back at it, well, at the end of this week and before the Jets open up their postseason. We will do a full-on playoffs. We will do a full-on playoff preview with all of our picks, including where the Jets end up and who wins the Stanley Cup. Bold predictions, awards, all that. Playoff Palooza will be the next episode when we get back at it at the end of the week. Until then, though, enjoy the rest of your week. Stay safe and have a good time. And let's get ready for a whiteout, baby. We'll talk to you guys soon. Peace.